This is your episode 5 of the Criminal Procedure Review Series. Episode 5 of 7 episodes. And we're going to talk about, as promised, warrants. Both arrest and search, but primarily search. Depending on where you came to this course from, education, training, experience-wise, this may or may not be the slow-pitch softball episode of the series. And with all due respect to anyone who may be listening who plays slow-pitch softball, no offense intended, of course, I played for several years myself, primarily for the opportunity to participate in the post-game celebrations, win or lose. You may see an injury in a slow-pitch softball game, and there may be teammates that couldn't hit the ball if it were stationary, and you get my point. But at this stage in the series, this should be an easy connection, bat to ball. You know this stuff. So let's take a review. There's 5 types of activities governed by the Fourth Amendment, things that we've talked about now in the various episodes. There's arrest with warrants. There's arrest without warrants. There's searches with warrants. There's searches without warrants. And there's seizure of evidence. Police seek arrest warrants and search warrants. And both arrest warrants and search warrants have 3 essential components. First, the warrant has to be issued by a neutral, a detached magistrate. And in Illinois, that's our circuit or associate circuit court judges. Second, the police must show probable cause. And then finally, our third element, our third essential component, the warrant has to conform to the Fourth Amendment's particularity requirement. Now, as I said, we're going to focus primarily on search warrants because search warrants are challenged more often than arrest warrants. And by now, we know that we need to make an application for a search warrant to the neutral, to that detached magistrate, to that circuit or associate court judge at our county courthouse. And if you're ever in the position to be the person seeking or leading the effort to seek a search or arrest warrant, I suggest you, at a minimum, lean on someone who has done this before and done it well, has a good reputation for having done it well. When I say having done it well, they don't end up in a pickle. They don't end up in a situation that is scrutinized. They don't have any cases at the appellate court where their search warrants were tossed out. Okay, those people are around. That's the majority of people. Find those people. Lean on those people. And I suggest you review your department's policies and procedures in this area, and hopefully you have those policies and procedures, and you hopefully have readily accessible forms and past examples. If you've not done this before, look at some other applications for search warrants. See how they're written. See how they describe probable cause and particularity facts. Lean on your resources, your people, your policy, your procedure, prior examples in your forms. And I also suggest that, regardless of the importance of the issue or case, you don't hesitate to reach out to someone from another department if your department doesn't have those resources. Some of us have fewer resources or work in smaller departments where these things don't come up as often. And if you had turnover and those people that have that experience aren't in your department, then look to a neighboring department that may have those resources, and hopefully you know some of the people in your neighboring departments to kind of have a good idea about who to lean on in that regard. And, typically those folks are going to help you out and be willing to help you out. And then remember what I suggested in past episodes about slowing down enough to seek the support of legal counsel where necessary, the county prosecutor, the city or village attorney, whoever it is that's available or should be available. And remember what I said there, if they're not available, go work on relationships to have them available. Whoever your legal counsel might be, if you have questions or concerns beyond those other sources, individuals, and resources you have available. And if this is something you expect to be called on to do regularly, seek and take a class specifically on this topic. Be a proficient expert. Become a proficient expert on the process. And this is very much a process from the application all the way through execution of a search warrant. It's a process. Like all the other processes we've discussed in this series, just like when I suggested that you practice the physical movements of taking somebody into custody, practice and become proficient with the expectations for seeking a search warrant. So that when you do, when you go to the judge, you have all your ducks lined up. All the T's crossed, all the I's dotted, everything is in order. So when you take that application to the judge, you need to be able to show probable cause and particularity. So probable cause. Showing probable cause for a search warrant is a two-part process. First, the officer applying for the search warrant must show probable cause that the items to be seized are connected with criminal activity. That should be a duh moment, right? We know that. Move on. All right, so I'll move on. Second, the officer must show probable cause that the items to be searched for and then ultimately seized are in the location to be searched. So, probable cause that the items to be seized are connected with the criminal activity and probable cause that the items to be searched for and then ultimately seized are in the location to be searched. And that means that you need to have facts. You need to have solid facts that are going to cause this judge to determine that you have probable cause, enough facts in both of those areas. And then we also need particularity. The particularity requirement for a search warrant has two elements. First, the warrant must specify the place to be searched. Be specific as to the place. An identifiable geographic place can be pinned on the map. Or a particular area. And we're going to talk about it in a little bit. Case involving a computer hard drive that becomes that particular place. Next, the warrant must specify the items to be seized. The items to be seized. So the place and the items. So you have to have probable cause. And particularity. The reason for particularity requirement goes back to the framers of our Constitution and their very valid concern with general warrants that were at that time issued against colonists by the King of England. These general warrants permitted limitless searches for evidence of treason, and anything that came up could get those individuals in trouble. serious trouble, like shot on the spot trouble. Obviously, we don't want to face that ourselves, and we don't want to be part of that sort of activity, right? So it's something that came from that era. Now, we have to note that mistakes occur as to the place to be searched. For instance, an incorrect address for the property listed on the application or warrant, occasionally leading to the wrong home or structure being searched. I remember several years ago, a local department had a warrant that they were attempting to move on. The warrant actually, for whatever reason, had the wrong address. It actually listed the house next door to the house intended to be searched. And so they go up to the door, and somebody, they knock, nobody responds. They bust through the door to find a little old lady who did live in that house lawfully and was not subject to the search warrant, sitting there watching The Price is Right, and luckily didn't have a heart attack. So that municipality had to replace the door and had all the embarrassment, and the people they were really trying to go search had some great opportunity to hide whatever it was that they were attempting to find with the search warrant. Generally, this type of mistake is not fatal to the results of the search. You know, if it's a mistake and then like that, the wrong address is listed and say they go to the address they intended, you know, that can happen too. You're in a neighborhood, a bunch of houses look exactly the same, and somebody puts down the wrong address, but one of the people that's very involved in the whole investigation knows exactly where you're going, and they lead the charge right into the proper the structure intended. Generally, that type of mistake's not fatal to the results of the search. On the other hand, when it comes to mistakes regarding the items to be seized, the courts have been less forgiving. And I'm going to talk about a case in a few minutes that sort of goes to that issue, but makes that more clear. Why is this? Well, go back to the King of England. It's in our constitutional DNA. It doesn't matter, and we don't need to debate the merits of a mistake or no mistake. It's suspect on its face if, you know, we come up with the wrong things. It's contrary to our constitutional DNA. So what's the lesson? Well, proofread your documents. Double check your data and information. Have someone else or more than one other person double check the information, if possible. In other words, be careful, just like with your writing your reports and checking the statute and making sure you have the elements represented in the report and all of that. It's just about slowing down and being careful. And if you're going through all the trouble to get a search warrant, then by all means, you should take that deep breath and be careful and proofread and double check your data, your information, and have someone else do that as well. So these cases are listed in your materials, but I thought there are some cases that are worth mentioning. Maryland versus Garrison is a United States Supreme Court case where police officers obtained a warrant to search the person of Lawrence McWebb and the premises known as 2036 Park Avenue, third floor apartment. That's what the warrant said. They believed that McWebb's apartment occupied the entire third floor when, in fact, there were two apartments on that floor, one of which belonged to another person named Garrison. The court held that the warrant was valid because it was based on information from a trusted informant that the police had inquired with a local utility company and were given the impression that there was only one apartment on the third floor. All right, so they were able to show good faith, probable cause to believe that this was where Mr. McWeb resided. And there wasn't any indication that Garrison had an apartment or that there was the third floor was divided into essentially two apartments. Another Supreme Court case, Anderson versus Maryland. In that case, the court upheld a warrant that authorized the seizure of several items together, and this is a quote, together with other fruits, instrumentalities, and evidence of crime at this time known. The court noted that the crime in question was particularly complex. And as the court stated, it could be proved only by piecing together many bits of evidence. And many bits of evidence, if you think about it, you know, what are most criminal cases proven by? Many bits of evidence. Many circumstantial dots connected together. Final case I'll talk about is the long drawn out case of People of the State of Illinois versus John T. McCavitt, an Illinois Supreme Court case. Or decision that came out in 2021 based on a case that began several years earlier, I believe 2014. And in that case, the Illinois State Police had obtained a search warrant for a personal computer owned by Peoria Police Officer John McCavitt. The warrant sought digital evidence of two unrelated incidents, an aggravated criminal sexual assault and the unauthorized video recording and live video transmission of an unnamed victim. Now, McCavitt was tried and acquitted of the alleged criminal sexual assault. But that was before a separate act of an unauthorized video recording was investigated. Following the acquittal and without a new warrant, the Peoria Police Department searched a copy of the computer's hard drive, and the search uncovered evidence of an unauthorized video recording. The digital search also uncovered child pornography, which was not specifically mentioned in the search warrant. Let me repeat that. Not specifically mentioned in the search warrant. But based on those images, McCavitt was convicted of several counts of child pornography. The Illinois Supreme Court in that case found that the subsequent search of a copy of the computer's hard drive, which uncovered child pornography not mentioned in the warrant, did not violate the Fourth Amendment. The court determined that under the unique facts of that particular case, the search that uncovered the child pornography did not violate McCavitt's Fourth Amendment rights. The warrant at issue diminished McCavitt's reasonable expectation of privacy in those images and the video stored on his computer. When he was acquitted of sexual assault, his reasonable expectation of privacy in his data relating to that particular offense was restored. However, and this is the interesting part, the acquittal did not resolve the portion of the warrant that authorized a search for digital evidence of the unauthorized video recording. The court determined that the post-acquittal computer examination was reasonably directed at obtaining that evidence, and the child pornography that was found during that search was admissible because it was found in plain view during that subsequent search. Let me repeat that. The court found that the evidence of child pornography was admissible because it was found in plain view during that subsequent search of the hard drive. Interesting stuff. And it goes to some issues that are ever evolving. And again, as I say often, you need to look at other courses you can take, especially if you get into electronic data and the ever-changing landscape with electronic data. I always tell my students, if that's you, if you're that person who builds their own computers and you're into programming and you're really into this stuff, from a technical perspective, there's a lot of work for you out there. There's a lot of opportunities. But you need to get specific on the legal aspects as well. Now, I need to make a little personal note, and I need to make a little disclosure here. The time that the McCavick case began, when all that surfaced and the initial investigation, arrests, etc. began, I was serving on the Peoria Fire and Police Commission. And I was in that capacity most of the time that case was moving through the system. I'm not in that role anymore, but I was serving in that role at the time. And for that reason, because I teach kids who want to be law enforcement officers, and I hope that they're successful as much as I hope that they're good candidates and police officers, you know, this case just hit close to home. And you probably gathered by now, I take that role seriously. It's my mission. I want the students to leave our programs to be successful in their employment, you know, career-wise, money-wise, etc. And I want them to be successful and know they'll be successful and teach that they'll be successful if they follow the law with the best of intentions and they don't try to live or operate above or below the law. But as you've heard me say, don't tell me how you feel. Tell me what you know. And what I know of this case from my professional analysis of this court is that the initial warrant was valid and based on probable cause and particularity. And because the warrant was valid, the things that turned up thereafter in the location, the hard drive, were determined to be properly seized. And that's it. That's the analysis. Let's talk about execution of the warrant a little bit. You know, there's some particular factors there that you need to be aware of. And some of those are going to be fairly consistent with other things we've talked about. Time constraints. The service of a search warrant should take place promptly after its issuance. The service of it. Now you may just say, well, you just talked about McCavick and there's this time and he's acquitted and yada, yada, yada. Well, no. I'm talking about the service. So the service of the warrant, the initial warrant from the Illinois State Police was timely. That evidence was seized. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about from the time that it's issued. So you go to the judge issues the warrant. You need to go and execute that warrant in a timely manner. The probable cause that formed the basis for that warrant could dissipate if there's an excessive amount of time that elapses between the time the warrant is issued and the time it is served. All kinds of different things can happen. All sorts of different things can happen. Go back to the example I gave where the local department went to the wrong house. I guess that evidence probably dissipated once they saw the police crash through the little old lady's house. Whoever was living in the house they intended to go search probably got rid of or moved whatever was in the location they originally intended to search. A second time restriction that is occasionally imposed pertains to the time of day. Judges commonly restrict the service of warrants to daytime hours, or at least favor daytime service. And the federal rules of criminal procedure, for example, restrict the service of warrants to daytime hours unless the issuing judge specifically authorized execution at another time. And under the federal rules, daytime hours are 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Now, there's always extenuating circumstances, but we're just talking in general, and you got to prove up why you can't go ahead and execute the warrant, and there's always good reasons but why you can't. The third time restriction concerns how long the police can search for evidence, and we've talked a little bit about this in other contexts. The general rule is that the search cannot last indefinitely. Once the item in the warrant has been discovered, the search has to be terminated. So with your particularity, you listed what you intend to search for, and once that has been located, then the search is over. Search must be terminated. And that's time constraints. The scope and the manner of the search is always something to be concerned with. And scope refers to where the police can look for evidence. The manner refers to the physical steps the police can take to find the evidence in question, including breaking down doors, forcibly opening locked cabinets, and other actions that could potentially damage property. And there's cases on this, and I've listed these cases in the materials, but Harris versus United States, a 1947 U.S. Supreme Court case, provided further clarification, saying, "The same meticulous investigation which would be appropriate in a search for two small canceled checks could not be considered reasonable where the agents are seeking a stolen automobile or an illegal still." So again, what the court's saying there is, what are you looking for, and then what would be an appropriate place to search for that thing? Michigan versus Summers, a U.S. Supreme Court case, the court said, "A warrant to search for contraband founded on probable cause implicitly carries with it the limited authority to detain the occupants of the premises while a proper search is conducted." The law enforcement interests at stake in that decision were officer safety, assistance with the completion of the search, and prevention of flight, prevention of the individuals fleeing. Another U.S. Supreme Court case, City of West Covina versus Perkins, gave us this. The police typically have to complete some type of a search record to be kept on file with the department. Now, interestingly, the police are not required to notify the property owner of the steps necessary for the return of the property or to remedy any perceived constitutional violations there, but you do need to keep record of what it is that you searched and especially what it is that you've seized. And you know, that should be second nature by now, right? Document, document, document. Regardless of any requirements, just good for you. Some challenges As I said earlier when we started this discussion, search warrants are challenged more often than arrest warrants, primarily because of the potential for shortcomings in the affidavit with probable cause. This is especially true with narcotic search warrants, as the evidence is often easy to move or dispose of. And as a result, search warrants are rejected and the evidence obtained is thrown out for a variety of reasons, limited solely to the imagination and the gumption of whatever defense attorney you have on the other side of the case. It's related to the effort and diligence of the police officer who sought the search warrant just as much, and the carefulness of the judge who reviewed the application and then issued the search warrant. Any of those parties or any of those things can impact the challenge. Now, the examples you may see in cases of the news include things such as failures to be specific as to the time frame the contraband was on the premises, failure to connect the evidence sought to the property to be searched, an affidavit that's riddled with conjecture and generalizations. We all know the generalizations. Habitual users of drugs keep drugs and paraphernalia in their home. That's too general. What drugs? Particular drugs. What people? What home? What specific individuals? And what home? And then what's your evidence as to that? Or too much reliance on opinions based on an officer's training and experience. Well, you need to get the training and you need to have the experience and you need to laud that. You need to say and not be afraid to say what your training and experience is and stand by that training and experience. The end of the day, tell the judge what you know and not what you feel in seeking a search warrant. Tell them what you know and have the facts. If you don't have the facts, you don't know anything. Have the facts. Before I move and close out with arrest warrants or that area, I want to talk about electronic surveillance briefly. Electronic surveillance includes a variety of methods for spying on the activities of suspected criminals, including both conversations and suspected criminal actions. The methods used to get this information are quite diverse, and they include wiretapping, bugging, hacking into computer transmissions, tracking movements of people or equipment, video surveillance, seeing through opaque surfaces with devices such as thermal imaging and gun detectors, the shot spotter in Peoria, or communities that use shot spotter. If you plan to use information from any of these things except the ShotSpotter, you better first seek a warrant to make this type of search. The reason ShotSpotter is different is that it surveys and takes information from outside structures and pinpoints the locations of gun use in a certain quadrant or section of the city. It may in fact lead to evidence, but it's not invasive in doing so. Provides a lead as to a potential or suspected firing of a weapon. And then other evidence can be developed. That's different than those other things. So if you're doing those other things, want to do those other things, get a warrant. Get a search warrant. So let's close out talking about arrest warrants. The Illinois Code of Criminal Procedure at 725 ILCS 5/107-9 requires that an arrest be reasonable, meaning that there must be probable cause that a person arrested committed a crime. If the arrest occurs in a public place, there's no requirement for a warrant. In order to enter a private property, the police need either consent or be justified by a qualifying emergency, or have an arrest warrant. We get an arrest warrant from a judge. Same requirements we talked about for a search warrant. And a judge may issue an arrest warrant when police testify before the court that the person has committed a crime. And the police have been unable to find or arrest that individual. The judge, if he finds probable cause to arrest, issues a warrant that places the individual's name in the database and then indicates they have a warrant out for their arrest. So the police can arrest the individual on site, and you probably had that experience. Typically, judges only issue arrest warrants if police believe the individual is purposely avoiding them. Now, this should be distinguished by another warrant that you may see come up as you deal with people. And that's the bench warrant. And the bench warrant is issued by a judge exclusive of the police. A bench warrant is issued when an individual fails to show up in court or on a criminal case, sometimes even a traffic case, and the judge issues a bench warrant. A judge or court can issue a bench warrant if the person has already been sentenced for a crime but failed to comply with their sentence as well. So failing to appear or have already sentenced, a bench warrant directs the police to take the person into custody and bring the individual before the court. That's not something we seek as law enforcement. That's something that the judge issues in criminal cases based on those circumstances. Now, the Civil Code of Civil Procedure at 735 ILCS 5/12-107.5 provides essentially the civil version of a bench warrant under certain circumstances we aren't going to dive into here. It provides for a writ of body attachment to be issued by a judge in a civil case where the defendant or party hasn't complied with an order of the court. And like the bench warrant, essentially directs the police to take the person into custody and bring the individual before the court. And you may run into that circumstance as you're on a traffic case or something like that. So those are the, you know, arrest and the related things related to an arrest warrant that you may encounter. You know, I just would say that in any of these situations, the law is clear and the circumstances, not so much. So use caution. Experience tells us that people avoid the law, people who choose to avoid the law, who choose to avoid their responsibilities or defy the court, and people who don't want to be found or face justice are at best unpredictable. And they should be approached with caution. And with that thought, I'm going to, and excuse the phone ringing. With that thought, I'm going to suggest and hope that you found something valuable in this session, that you stay safe. And as always, if you need me, reach out. You know where to find me.